Hello, I'm Robin Kermode. Welcome to the Art of Communication podcast. This is a special edition of the Heineken podcast, and this is about the power of storytelling. For 150,000 years, human beings have listened to stories. It was an oral tradition. Only in the last 5,000 years have human beings learnt to read and write. So we've been listening to stories for 30 times longer than we've been reading them. Now, why am I telling you this on the Heineken podcast, where the leadership expectations are, as you know, connect, shape, deliver, develop, and role model? Why are stories and why is the power of storytelling relevant to those leadership expectations? Well, the answer is it makes your messages more memorable. It's as simple as that. It just makes your messages more memorable. And in all of those five leadership expectations, storytelling is not only relevant, but can be fitted in very easily. A few years ago, I read a book called Who Moved the Cheese? Who Moved the Cheese? I don't know if you've read the book. Anyway, it's a very simple story. It's basically the story of two mice, and they go off every day to find the cheese. One day they turn up and the cheese is no longer there. So Mouse A says, well, maybe the cheese will come back tomorrow. And Mouse B says, maybe we should look somewhere else if the cheese has moved. Anyway, they both decide to go back the following day to the same place. The cheese is not there. By the third day, Mouse B decides that actually he'll go off in search of cheese elsewhere. The moral of the story, of course, is that Mouse A, who continued to go back to the empty space where there was no cheese, died because there was no food, and Mouse B survived because the cheese was somewhere else. It's a parable, I suppose, in a way. It has a message, and the message is if your industry is broken or if your circumstances change, you have to go looking elsewhere. Now, when I read this book, I was an actor. This was about 20 years ago. And at that time, although I was working a lot as an actor, the income that actors were making was going down and down. And my wife said to me, look, have you thought about becoming a coach? And I kind of thought, nah, I like what I'm doing. I'm comfortable in my own space. I like being an actor. I read Who Moved the Cheese? And because of the way the story landed, it spoke to me. And I changed my life. If someone had just said to me, do you know what, Robin? Your industry has changed. Go and do something else. My wife had been telling me that, but it wasn't as powerful as a very simple story about two mice. So stories have an enormous power to move us. As children, of course, we used to listen to fairy stories. Fairy stories, of course, are generally for children, and they generally start with once upon a time. Fables tend to be passed down with a good lesson to be learned. Fables tend to personify animal characters like the tortoise and the hare or the boy who cried wolf. Parables such as Christian Andersen's The Emperor's New Clothes, or indeed parables from the Bible, The Good Samaritan, The Prodigal Son, these are examples of stories that have a meaning and hopefully a resonance for us in other parts of our lives. The word fable, of course, comes from the Latin word fabula, which means a narrative, and the suffix eula meaning little, so it's a little story, a little narrative, and the word myth comes from the Greek word mythos meaning story. The Greek stories, the myths, are about gods and their powers only passed down orally from one generation to the next. The way I look at stories is this. I had a client last year who won Hedge Fund Manager of the Year. He booked me to work on his acceptance speech. Now, his acceptance speech, of course, was only going to be 1 minute long. And he thought, rather cleverly, this is a good platform for me to be seen within the industry, and maybe I can use the video of my acceptance speech on my website for publicity. So we spent 2 hours writing a 1 minute speech. And I said to him, let's reverse engineer this. What boxes do you want to tick by giving this speech? So I said, if we break it down into sections, you've got a 1 minute speech, let's break it down into 3 20-second sections. So you've got a chance to tell 3 little stories, but each of those stories have to be there for a reason. They have to have a purpose. So which boxes do they tick? I said to him, what do you want people to feel or think about you at the end? He said, well, I'd like people to think that I'm good at my job. I said, okay, so we need a story that says, basically, or implies you're good at your job. He said, then I'd like to be thought of as a thought leader. I said, fantastic. So we'll have a story around that. And then he said, I'd like to be thought of as approachable and friendly and human. I said, great, we'll have a story about that. So we broke these down. And if I just do a couple of them here, he said, I want to be a thought leader. And I said, okay, so rather than you saying I'm a thought leader, which would be fairly logical and slightly boring in a way, and maybe a little bit pompous, I said, why don't we set it as if it was a story, as if you were recounting something that actually happened. Now, of course, it didn't happen, but that's not really the point. So he ended up by saying, I was at dinner last night. And last night is important, and I'll come back to that later on. It's about anchoring the story. So he said, last night, I was at dinner. This is pre-COVID, of course. Last night at dinner, I sat next to a young lady who had just left university. And she said to me, would you say that being an investment professional or being a hedge fund manager was a good industry to go in? Now, of course, he set it up so he can answer the question and therefore be thought of as a thought leader. In the human section, I said, have you ever won anything before? And he said, no. He said, actually, so he said, I won the 100 meters hurdles aged 13. I said, brilliant. So he started off by saying, do you know, I'm so pleased to win this award. I've never won an award before. In fact, actually, I won one, and that was when I was 13 years old, and I won the 100 meters hurdles at school. It's been downhill ever since, or whatever. So rather than just standing there saying the obvious, which is, thank you very much, I want to thank my mother and everybody else, rather like in Oscar speeches. I remember one of the best Oscar acceptance speeches I ever heard was Colin Firth when he won for A Single Man, the Tom Ford film. And he stood up, and this ticks all the boxes. So he stood up and he basically told a story, which is not what people do generally at the Oscars. So he stood there holding his award and he said, first of all, he said, of course, thank you very much. Then he said, on the desktop of my computer is a letter to the director of this film, Tom Ford, to say that I can't possibly play this part. I was about to press send when my doorbell rang and a man came to mend my fridge. Now, if the man hadn't come to mend my fridge, I wouldn't be standing here today. So this award is for the man who came to mend my fridge. Thank you very much. And he walked off. Now, that story, whether it happened or not, doesn't really matter. The point is, the boxes that it ticked were these. I'm human. I'm vulnerable. I'm not sure I can play this part. I'm not arrogant. I have trouble with white goods. I give my award to the man who came to service my white goods. So I'm a nice human being. So it ticked three boxes, one little story. And I think that's a way in which stories can be used in a business context. I had one client of mine who's the CEO of a big global asset manager, and he gives a speech every year at their Christmas party. They have a big sit-down for about 1,000 people, and he stands up and he does a heartwarming Christmas speech, obviously a little bit about the industry, but mostly about fun things that have happened. And one year, when I was writing his speech with him, he said, yeah, but nothing's really happened this year, Robin. I'm struggling a bit. And I said, well, what did happen? Eventually, he said, well, we moved into a new building. I said, fantastic. There must be all sorts of stories about things that didn't work or did work or people being trapped in lift or all sorts of things. And he said, well, actually, something did happen. And I said, what's that? He said, well, the Queen came to open it. I said, oh, my goodness me, you're saying nothing happened this year and the Queen came to open your new building. He said, yes, it was quite funny, actually, because on the day, I was so nervous. I got up early. I didn't want to wake my wife. So I got dressed in the dark, which meant that I had odd socks on by the time I got there. And I was so concerned that I had a fountain pen in my pocket because I wanted to give her a fountain pen so she could sign the visitor's book, that I had a fountain pen that I'd overfilled. It had leaked in my pocket, and now I had ink over my white shirt, so I have to keep my jacket buttoned up all day. Now, these are human qualities that we can all relate to, you know, what it would be like to meet the Queen and the nervousness around that. This makes him a more approachable human being, of course. So often when people say to me, nothing really happened, actually a lot happened. Sometimes, and you'll probably remember, those of you who've worked with me in the past, I often ask groups of people to tell me what their journey to work was like that morning. And people will come up and say, well, do you know, I was so pleased this morning because I got my usual seat on the train. Normally, there's an elderly man who sits on this particular seat, and I always say good morning to him. He wasn't there this morning, and I was worried. I thought maybe something had happened to him. Anyway, just as the train was about to pull out, this man jumped on the train. Somebody helped him and pushed him up because he's quite elderly. He sat down a little bit puffed. And he said, oh, I didn't manage to get a coffee this morning. And I said, do you know what? I said, I've got a coffee this morning, and I've got two cups here because I've got a second cup to insulate it to stop my hands, you know, being hurt from the heat. So what I did was I took the other cup, poured it, and I gave him half. What a fantastic start to the morning. Bit of generosity of human spirit. Now, those are little incidents that happen to us all the time. And we can use those stories, and we can use them either as stories or as parables. And I think they're powerful, they're memorable, and they're much more conversational. There's nothing worse than somebody starting a presentation with, okay, let me start off with slide number one. What we actually want is someone to say, do you know what happened recently? I was on the radio last week and the interviewer said to me, Robin, talking about opening of speeches, what's your most common opener of a speech? And I said, the most common two words that I start opening a speech with are these, last Tuesday. And they said, why last Tuesday? I said, because last Tuesday anchors a story. So I normally start with a story because we loved stories when we were children. We like a story. And if somebody's going to tell us a story, there's normally a reason. And the reason is it's a parable, or maybe there's a funny or an unexpected end, a twist, or maybe it's to point out something in business. I remember also coaching the CEO of one of the big four supermarkets in the UK, one that Heineken, of course, will be selling a lot of product through, hopefully. This was probably going back 6 or 7 years ago. They have 2,500 stores. You probably work out which supermarket it was from that. And he was going to give a speech to 2,500 store managers. We were running through his speech and I said to him, what is the point of your speech? And he said, well, thing is, I've got lots of points. And I said, you can have lots of points, but we have to have one overarching, one main point. And he said, well, I don't really know what it is. He said, I'm sort of giving a general update. And I said, but nobody wants a sort of general update. So I said, let's go through it and we'll find it. Anyway, about 7 minutes into his rehearsal, he said something and I thought, that's it. That's your point. So basically, instead of doing what he was going to do, which is the standard, hello, good morning, everyone, I'm going to speak for 20 minutes and then the CFO will come on and then I'll take Q&A. Instead of all that, we lose all that. He came out and he said, last Tuesday, a customer went into one of our stores and said this. And the words came up on the screen. I never want that to happen again. Now, of course, he's got everyone's attention because everyone is hoping that didn't happen in their store. But also, it's gone straight in with a story. The nice thing about that, of course, is that using the headline sandwich, those of you who have worked with me before will remember the headline sandwich where you start with one point and you repeat it at the end. It makes you look like you have a through logical argument. So at the end, he was able to say, so if we change our behavior, no customer will ever go into one of our stores again and say that. So the thing about stories is they want to be anchored. They want to be real. They want to come across as if they actually happened. I work quite a lot with politicians, as you might know, and in the last few elections, I've seen politicians do this, which I find very irritating. They will say something like, I met a girl yesterday called Sharon, and she asked me what the state of the economy was. Now, I think the likelihood of this person actually bumping into somebody on the street called Sharon who asked that question is very, very unlikely. But if they anchored the story, it makes possibly a made-up story, and often stories, in fact, and often stories I tell, actually don't happen quite as they happen. But what I've done is I amalgamate several incidents, put them together in one story, but I anchor it so that it sounds absolutely real. So if that politician had said, do you know, I was on a train coming back from giving a speech in the north of England, I was coming back on the train, and sitting at the table opposite was a young lady. And I noticed these extraordinary shoes. She had very sparkly shoes. They looked slightly reminiscent of something from an ABBA movie. They caught my eye. She looked across, recognized me and smiled, and I said hello. And then she said, can I ask you a question? And I said, yes. She said, is the economy going to pick up or not? Now, that story suddenly sounds real, purely by the fact that there's an anchor in there, and the anchor there were the shoes. Now, it could be that the whole thing was made up, and he never met anyone at all on a train, let alone somebody wearing those particular shoes. But if you anchor a story like that, it makes it sound more real. I'm a great fan of self-deprecating stories, and I have an actor friend of mine who sent out a Christmas, inside his Christmas card, one of those printed updates of the year. Now, he didn't do what most people do, which is to have an A4 sheet telling you how brilliant their family is and how amazing all the children are and how they're all doing incredible things. He didn't do that. He had about four lines, and it had clearly been cut and pasted all the way down this sheet and been torn with a ruler. So I got this thin strip of about an inch wide, and it said this. Now, this is not what you expect. I once started a talk with this, actually, at Christmas time, and I said, I've just received this in the post, and I held it up. So I held up my little prop, which is this piece of paper. But it was a true story, because this is what had happened. But I love self-deprecating stories, and I read this out to this audience. And it said, dear all, I haven't had the best year, because I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. But I have to say, having a camera shoved up and down my manhood is the most I've appeared on screen for several years. Now, what I love about that, there's a kind of gallows humor around that. And it's also unexpected endings. I love unexpected endings to stories. Charlie Chaplin was asked, what is comedy? And he said, well, basically comedy is this. In a film context, you see a man eating a banana. He throws the banana skin away. Then you cut to another man walking towards the banana skin, and of course you think he's going to slip on it. So you have a close-up of the man's feet walking towards the banana skin, a close-up of the banana skin, and as he gets close, you think, oh dear, he's going to slip on the banana skin. But no, he sees the banana skin, he walks over the banana skin, and falls down an open manhole cover. It's the unexpected endings that always make us laugh.
It's really important that the setup is done correctly. Just like when we watch any of the famous comedian double acts, there's normally a straight man and the funny guy. The straight guy is as important. The setup for a story or a punchline is vital. So, for example, if you were being best man to your friend and they've now become a famous hairdresser, if you start off by saying, my friend here was told by his grandfather when he was 3 years old that he should never become a hairdresser. A, it assumes that the audience knows that he currently is a hairdresser. His side will know that he's a hairdresser. His partner's side might not. And the other thing is that it seems a very unlikely story, so it doesn't seem very logical. And if it's not logical, the audience won't laugh. Why would a grandfather say to a child at three, you'll never become a hairdresser? The only reason, probably, is that something had triggered it. So, for example, maybe the child got hold of his sister's doll with long hair at the age of three, found a pair of kitchen scissors and cut all the hair off. The grandfather might well have said, when you grow up, I hope you'll never become a hairdresser. Now, that story only works if all those pieces of information are given in the beginning. And if they are given in the beginning, then, of course, you should end up with a laugh because the setup, the feed line, as it were, was clean.
Now, that's a great way to tell stories. There are inspirational stories. You know, my first teacher told me this, or my grandfather told me that, these kind of inspirational stories. Overcoming adversity. You know, things were so bad in my first job that I had to do this. It's a classic interview question, isn't it? You know, what are the biggest challenges you've overcome? But you can turn those into stories. Overcoming adversity. So we have unexpected endings, inspirational stories, overcoming adversity. And we have real life and funny stories, of course. I don't know if you saw, but a couple of years ago, a company in Japan programmed a computer to write a story, and they entered it into a story competition, and it came second. They went through about 2,000 famous novels, and they took the basic formula, and they put that into a machine, and the machine then wrote a story. So there is a formula, and the fairy tale template is probably the most widely known one. Most fairy stories follow this simple template. Once upon a time, there was a... They used to do this, then one day something changed, so they did this, and as a result, they did this. We can use that in a business context too. We might change the language depending on the situation, but in a business scenario, it might sound something like this. 22 years ago, Mrs. X founded this company. She had a vision, and gradually she built up the business. But last year, she was approached to sell the company. She thought about it carefully. Eventually, she decided not to sell, and I'm happy to say that we're still an independent company and growing fast. That story follows the same pattern, which is, once upon a time there was somebody, they used to do this. Something changed, so they did this, and as a result, they did this. So there are five steps to a fairy tale template. So many clients of mine will say to me, I have to speak for 20 minutes at this event. So the first thing they do is to open up PowerPoint. They start with slide number one. And then they say, oh, I'll start with Peter's slide, or I'll start with Jane's slide, because that's fantastic. Now, it may be that those slides are good, but are they actually relevant to what you really want to say? So I think the best way forward is to think, what boxes do you want to tick? So in this event here, am I trying to motivate, inspire, shock, teach, mentor? You know, what is it you're trying to achieve with a particular group of people you're speaking to? And then think, as a leader, which boxes do I want to tick? What do I want them to feel at the end of it? What do I want them to do at the end of it? Then you will end up with two or three boxes that you want to tick. So therefore, rather than just thinking, I can go through the figures. Of course we want to go through the figures. We want to go through all that. But just ahead of that each time, if we can put in a story that ticks one of those boxes, I think you'll find that your message lands really well. So whether we're talking about the tortoise and the hare, the ugly duckling, the lion and the mouse, the boy who cried wolf, the emperor's new clothes, the Good Samaritan, the prodigal son, or indeed, who moved the cheese? Stories make us listen, stories are memorable, and Even if we think we're not a great storyteller, I would encourage you all to tell stories, not just for the sake of it, but to make your point and to make your point land. And in all the five Heineken leadership expectations, connect, shape, deliver, develop, role model, in all those, there are many opportunities for us to tell stories. After a while, it becomes addictive, actually. It's great fun, and I wish you all the very best of luck in using the power of stories. I do hope our paths cross again, and in the meantime, of course, in the current situation we're in, keep safe, and I wish you and your family a healthy and happy year ahead.